Hello again, this is Dolores Cannon with the Metaphysical Hour. But I don't know if you can really tell the difference anymore, because when I'm gone, they say they're always playing the shows out of the archives, and it's hard to tell when I'm here and when I'm just on tape. So tonight we are live. We just returned from an all the way around the world trip. Let me give out the toll-free number before I get started here. If anyone wants to call in tonight and talk, the toll-free number is 1-888-815-9756. 888-815-9756, if anybody wants to jump in there and talk. Okay, well, one thing I found... It was a revelation for me, I guess. I have proved a theory that really did, but we proved a theory that the world really is round, because we started here and we ended up back here. That's the first time I've ever done that. I've got a ticket to go all the way around the world, and it was quite an experience, but there's a lot of time on airplanes. And I've got my daughter Julia here tonight because she went with me on this trip, and I want her to jump in, and we're going to discuss the trip. And people have told me, you do listeners, when I talk to you all over the world, you said you like me to talk about my trips because you feel like I take you with me that way. But this one was, we went to places we had never been before. Back in March, I did a class and a talk in Norwich, in England, and we met a woman there who asked me, she said, have you ever been to Johannesburg? And I said, no, I've never been down into South Africa. The only place in Africa I've ever been is up in the Middle East, up in Dubai. She said, would you like to go? I said, well, I guess if somebody arranged it and set it up, I guess I could go. So she went about doing it. She wanted me to come. So we were also doing an expo in Perth. I go back to Australia quite a bit. So we said, let's see if we can hook it on to that. So the easiest way to do it was just to keep going all the way around the world. So we started out in August, and we went to London first, spent the night there. As I found out, those are long, long trips, and it's a lot easier to break them up along the way. Went to London first, and then we flew to Johannesburg. And for, you know, all our lives, we have been conditioned to think of these countries in certain ways. You know, we all hear everything on TV and the way we read about places, and we get a picture in our mind of what it's going to be like. Well, we were really very surprised. Africa is not at all what I thought it was going to be. Totally different. We picture jungles, wild animals, maybe Tarzan swinging from a tree. But, you know, the way we've been conditioned. So we really didn't know what to expect when we landed in Johannesburg. And believe me, there was no jungles in sight anywhere. So I'll let Julie come in here, too. Yeah, we landed in Johannesburg. You said... You felt like you hadn't even left home, did you?
Oh, yeah. Many times I kept feeling like I was in America. And that's one of the things lately. Sometimes in America I go places and I don't feel like I have no idea where I am. I figure I'm in another country and I have to keep reminding myself where I am. So it surprised me then when I'm in this other country that I had to keep reminding myself I was not in America. As we get into it further, there are some funny things about, you know, little lingo things that we learn in other countries, and they have our lingo there. And so it's just really very funny. I mean, it looks like America in very many ways, and it sounds like America, except they have a little bit of an accent.
So. Their accent isn't as bad as England, though.
No, it's like a very mild English accent. It's very easy, and it's easy on the ears. Very nice. So.
And they speak English, and all the signs that are in English, and that really helps a lot. But I was really surprised at the large majority of white people. That wasn't what I was thinking was going to be either.
Right.
There's a lot of workers, but it still wasn't exactly what we thought it was going to be like. But the terrain around, well, Johannesburg itself looks like any large city in the United States. Everything is there. That's why she said, just like you thought you would never left the country. And when we went outside of Johannesburg, the terrain, the countryside, reminded me of New Mexico or Nevada.
Right.
That kind, not desert, but just kind of desolate.
Or Texas had kind of Texas or California. It's all of that kind of area. It's kind of a little bit flat and, you know, a little bit rolling, but not a lot of terrain, not a lot of trees, smaller shrub, things like that. So
not at all what you would think. I always think of jungle, and there wasn't any jungle in sight anywhere. But Johannesburg, they have this big, beautiful new airport they've just built. It's huge. The only thing I didn't like is you have to walk so far. They have not put in moving sidewalks. They didn't have the carts to get you around.
I think that's an American thing.
You think so?
Yes. Yes, I think we may be spoiled as Americans.
But it was a lot of walking. It was just very huge, brand-new airport. But then when we got into Johannesburg, there's construction going on everywhere. The highways, they're widening all the highways. The infrastructure is really growing. But the reason for that is because next year they're going to have the World Cup in Johannesburg.
In July.
Mm-hmm. In July, and they're trying to get ready for it. Not only in Johannesburg, but about four or five other cities mm-hmm. in South Africa. They're going to be going from place to place.
Yeah.
So they're all really doing the building to get ready for that.
So everywhere we went was under construction.
That's where all the workers were, everywhere.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But all the highways are being widened. They're going to be fantastic. They're really looking for a lot of traffic to come in. I think they said there was 30 new hotels that were being built also.
Right. A lot of this was stuff that was needed because their population is growing so much anyway, but it was something that was kind of put on a back burner, and this has helped bring it to the forefront. It was infrastructure that they needed, and so it's all getting done, so it's really going to help, and then it'll probably bring even more people in,
mm-hmm.
in general, to move in. So.
Yeah, because like you said, it was probably been held off for a long time. But I didn't see too much poverty. Or maybe we didn't go, well, all right. There was all the shacks that were around the airport. Okay. Okay.
Hello.
But were we in two separate countries?
I think maybe.
Okay.
Different dimensions or something, huh?
Okay. Well, there wasn't.
I mean,
there wasn't
that was no. what, you know, you kind of expect to see, and, I mean, immediately coming out of the airport, it was right there, and they said they don't like that, and they're trying to get rid of it, but they're kind of squatting on the land. I mean, it was just miles and miles of just little shacks or just little makeshift, you know,
yeah, pieces
things.
Of metal and mm-hmm. things put up to make little houses.
Right.
But there isn't too much of that.
No, I mean, they're all located in certain areas. I mean, there'll be a lot of it right in an area, and then once you get away from that, then you're into... Yeah, kind of you see it moving up into a middle class, into an upper class, things like that. So
mm-hmm.
They said there's a pretty great divide between their classes. So
yeah, but they said that they are rebuilding because they're wanting to get everything ready for the World Cup. So a lot of changes are being made, and they're relocating a lot of the people that were in those
right.
Those
well,
shelters.
Another, well, part of what they're doing because they said they were in those makeshift places, they are actually building them homes, little small homes that have electricity and plumbing, which they didn't have any of that before. So little by little, they're putting these people into, it's probably like a government kind of home, you know, things, but they have much better house than what they had. So,
mm-hmm. So it is different than America. But I think everywhere in America, you're going to find slums. But maybe we just didn't go over into some of those other parts anyway.
I don't know. I saw quite a few. She kept taking us by them so you could see them. Maybe
yeah.
You just weren't looking.
Okay. Otherwise, it did look just like the States. But one thing she said, this is the lady who brought us there. We learn a lot whenever we go somewhere. And we stay with the local people. You find out a lot about a country. One thing we found out is that South Africa is run by a communist party.
Right, I think they said 75% was communist.
Yeah,
something like that. I'm not into political lingo, so I'm not sure if I've got that right. But
But it surprised me that she said it was the second largest communist party.
Third largest.
Second. It's the second between. She said the second largest in the world. First was China. It was South Africa. And then was Russia.
I thought it was third.
But that surprised me because I would have thought the Russian Communist Party would be larger. But I didn't know if it was a communist or it was holdover from the British Commonwealth days. But they said South Africa was mostly settled by the Dutch. Then later, I think it was taken over by the British. But if the communists are running it, they're doing a good job.
Well, they seem to be. I mean, there was some talk about how there's a great divide between their classes and things like that. But I don't know exactly how. I mean, I've been to some other communist countries, and this didn't seem that way. I mean, these people are working, and they seem to have enthusiasm and motivation. Before, when I went to a communist country, I didn't see anything like that. People could care less. They were just there. They almost looked like walking in their sleep and walking dead people, that kind of thing. I mean, they had no motivation to do anything. There was nothing. I didn't see that here. You know, I saw people, like in America, you're interacting. It seemed like a democratic society. So I don't know what part of it makes it communist.
I don't know, but especially if they're building housing for the homeless,
right.
One, that is all that is good.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing I found interesting, I was talking to the lady that brought us, and I said, well, in America, all we hear about Africa is the homeless, the refugees that are trying to escape, and they have all the wars going on and the genocides where everybody's being slaughtered. And these are the places where they're always talking about people donating money to help with these the refugees and
right.
the poor and the starving. So that was the picture you have in your mind of Africa. So I was talking to her, and she said, oh, no, that's not true at all. That is small pockets in Africa. The majority of Africa, they said, is pretty well off just the way they are. What she said. Anyway.
Okay, I wasn't there when you were having the conversation, so I don't know.
Okay.
You'll have to remember that one.
All right. But I wanted to know where there were the jungles. She said the jungles are mostly in the middle part of Africa, and then the northern part you have the deserts. But she did say that those refugees in those parts are just in certain countries, little pockets. They're not representative of the entire country of Africa. And there was something
about the funds that they get?
The money that was being donated by people from over here
right.
to help the refugees and to stop the genocide and all that, she said was not going to the people it was supposed to
right.
go to. It was really going to the armies to keep the wars going.
Right.
Which sounds like a lot of things that happen everywhere. They never go to where they're supposed to go. With a lot of charities, they don't. But I'm not going to get political and start talking politics or placing blame. But I just think you never really know about these things until you go to these countries and you check these things out yourself.
Well, I think you said that she had made the comment that really, they have the resources to take care of these people, and they can probably, they'd probably best just be left alone and left to take care of their own situation.
Yeah, in the different countries.
Right.
Let them take care of their own people and run their own government.
Right.
But still, that shows it's not representative of the entire country of Africa. But when we were in Johannesburg, we went outside Johannesburg. We wanted to find places we could buy souvenirs. So we went out to the markets. So we got out a ways. And there is when you could see it looked more like New Mexico,
right.
Nevada.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they had a lot of people selling handmade wood objects and very beautiful artwork.
Mm-hmm.
So we brought some of those back for souvenirs. Of course, we had a problem. They told us, I said, a lot of times they confiscate wooden objects whenever you get to the airport. They won't let you bring them back in the States. So we wanted to make sure we were getting something that we could bring back. So they said only the ones made out of light wood were the ones they were worried about, you know, the customs, because they're worried about worms in the wood, bringing it back into the States. But we found out differently when we got to the airport.
Well, yeah, I mean, they said just get things the heavy wood, the dark wood. And so that's what we did. And then when we got to the Australian border, they decided it didn't matter, and they were going to look at everything we got. So
on their form you have to fill when you're going into the country, they want to know if you've been to Africa or South America. So they want to know what we had, but they took everything out of the suitcase. But gratefully,
it was all fine. Yeah,
it was all okay, but they wanted to inspect every bit of it. That's one of the problems. And I think we couldn't have got back in with any kind of skins or fur.
Mm-hmm, right. And anything made from animals, we had some things made out of bone, but I think if it had been made more from an animal, they wouldn't have allowed it. So.
Yeah, I had a horn that was beautifully carved, and they really looked at that, but they said they passed inspection anyway on that.
Right.
But those are the main things, I think, that they didn't want. Oh, and they in the markets, they had ostrich eggs that were carved and painted, really beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
But I just thought that would never make it in my luggage. It would get broke.
Right, but then that's one of the things that they said absolutely you could not bring. So it's a good thing you didn't get it and then have it confiscated.
Yeah, because so. That's what they said when they had the whole list there, any kind of egg products or anything. So sometimes when you're in these countries, things look beautiful, but you can't bring them back in the States. And even if you shipped, I don't know how you would ship an ostrich egg.
Yeah, lots of peanuts.
Lots of bagging. Well, we had a few things that get broke anyway, even if it was. But anyway, it was most about Johannesburg. And then, there I did lectures and I did a class. Oh, yeah. They said the amazing thing about Johannesburg, the people there are not really into metaphysics. We're kind of like the pioneers, the groundbreakers going in there. They have books of all the speakers we know in the United States, but they don't have the actual speakers themselves going down there. In fact, they said very few Americans come down there.
Right. They said usually the only Americans, people didn't think we were from America because very few Americans go there. They said usually the only Americans go there to hunt.
To hunt.
And so I was like, well, we didn't bring our guns.
To go on safari.
Right, yeah. And so very few Americans are there.
It was a long way.
That's what they were thinking. You were from, you were Afrikaans because they didn't know your accent. They're not familiar. But the thing is, see, they have so much American TV, that's where they have our lingo and they have, you know, they know what they don't have a problem with our accent and everything, but they didn't realize you weren't from there.
So,
in that restaurant, he thought you were for Afrikaans.
Uh-huh. The Afrikaans are more descendants from the Dutch, I believe, the original ones. That's why their accents are a little bit different.
Mm-hmm.
But you mean in the restaurant, you know, we were getting ready to leave, and you said you wanted the...
Oh, yeah, one of our lingo... Well, one of the things we've learned in England and Australia and New Zealand, things like that, when you have something to go, like at a restaurant, and you want to get something to go... It's called takeaway, not to go. And if you had something left over at the end of your meal, they use the same term. It's like, you know, to take away. Rather than we use the term, you know, I'll get to that in a minute. Anyway, in Africa, I'm trying to be all nice and act like I know the language and stuff in these different countries. And so I'm asking, because we had some dessert or something left over at the end of the meal, and I'm just asking if we can have it in a takeaway thing. And the other person in our party says, oh, you mean like a doggy bag? Like, I give up. What part of you is not like America?
That's what you meant. It was like we didn't leave at all. But I found that this was my first time to do a class in Johannesburg, and that they're not really, I guess you would say, they're taking their baby steps in metaphysics. They've read some books. They don't have a lot of knowledge about it. Not like the Americans.
Well, it's a difference. It's almost like what we saw in Russia. They have knowledge, but But then that kind of goes off in another direction. I think that has to do with the culture that's been there and is long entrenched there that they're dealing with and moving out of or moving around or something. Because they have, I mean, you can see it happening and you can really see a major shift happening there. But as far as them and individuals, I mean, I could see it. They're into it and everything, but
there's a big interest.
But then they'll get off. You know, it's like then some of the questions go in a direction. It's like, wait a minute, that what part does that have in here? And so that's where it's like that's what it was like in Russia. It's like, okay, you're into this, but then all of a sudden they go off in a direction that has no place. And so it's like, okay, where are you in all of this? So.
Yeah, I just like the feeling they're taking their baby steps. They're interested, but they don't have a lot of knowledge yet. And that's why the questions, they had a lot of questions they were asking about things.
Yeah, well, a lot in the in your talk. I thought a lot of them found interesting. A lot of the questions had to do with the Jesus books and the Jesus information. And that really gave us an inclination of where they are.
They're coming out of religion.
Yes, they're moving out of that, and so they're still asking those questions and everything about that. They're still very interested in that. So,
well, when the lady asked us to come down there, she said that there was a hunger. Almost, there's such an interest that it's a whole new thing. It's opening up here, and that there's a hunger to know, but nobody is coming to give them the information. Well, when we got there, they have a magazine called the Odyssey Magazine, and in there, I had an article, and they had the advertisements about me, that next month, in October, my friend Doreen Virtue was coming, and she was also featured in there. She had an article that she had written in there, but the interesting thing is, next month, three metaphysical speakers are coming for the first time ever in South Africa, and they're all going to be there at the same weekend. That's Doreen Virtue, Jay-Z Knight, who channels Ramtha, and John Gray, the one with women are from Venus and men are from Mars. First time for any of these metaphysical speakers, and they're all coming the same weekend. That means the people who don't know anything about this are going to have a choice which one they
want
to go to.
Well, but their books have been there for quite a while, so they know about them. And luckily, they're just different enough that they would probably attract different people. But it's hard to say because it's new enough there that people are probably going to want to go to all of them.
Yeah.
So
it's like it's strange to me that there was no metaphysical speakers going at all. And now all of a sudden, all of these coming from America.
Well, that's what I mean. And I had the feeling. I could just feel it, this huge shift. It's almost like what I was being shown was that they are going to take this giant leap and they're going to get caught up with the rest of us, like, very quickly. And so can you imagine what that's going to be like for this whole area to do that, you know, and that kind of stuff. So that's what they're doing.
Yes, and that's why they want me to come back.
Mm-hmm.
Even though it's a long trip, I really feel I'm going to have to. And our books just got down there. And so we went into the mall, and they have big malls, just like the States. Mm-hmm. And in the mall, we went into a bookstore just to ask questions, and my books were already in the stores. So that shows, they said, by next year when I come back, there's going to be even more books, they'll know more about me, so we'll attract even more people.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So it's a whole new, I don't want to say world, a whole new area is opening up that are fresh for a metaphysics.
Yeah, she was right. They're very hungry for it. So.
But I did my lecture, and then when I did my class, it was funny to me. It shows where they are. In my class, I teach them about my method of hypnosis, and we teach them about basic past life regression first. And then we go into the part where you call in the subconscious and the healing. And I've spoke about this many times on this show. So we tell them all the basics, the textbook things. Then I get ready to do my demo. And the demo went a totally different direction. And I was okay with it because it's happened a lot. But I could see their faces like, wait a minute, this isn't what you just told us will happen. I'm finding more and more now, instead of people going into past lives, they're going back to when they were with God and when they were created, or going to when they lived in outer space, didn't have bodies, they were light beings, energy beings. And I'm used to that. And they've come into to Earth now in these bodies for the first time. But as I was doing the session, I was looking around at them, and they're kind of sitting there like, what's going on? But the woman did go to where she was a being in space who was going from planet to planet to help bring knowledge without mm-hmm. having a body. Mm-hmm. And then she decided to come to, or was told to come to Earth for the first time.
She was told, ask nicely.
Ask nicely,
yes.
To come to Earth to help the people of Earth. And this, I've talked about this also on the show, about them being the volunteers that are coming in right now. So that was totally not what I was teaching them about. So I guess they got a taste of, hey, this is what is ahead of you if mm-hmm. you really get into this field.
Right, right. Yeah, that's usually what we find, is whatever the demonstration is something they need to see, because it's probably what they're going to get.
Yeah.
So, and I know they were just looking for just regular, a past life. They were all excited about seeing a past life, and then they get this fantastic thing. It's like, what was that?
Yeah.
So.
Well, every time I do a demonstration for a class, I never know what's going to happen. But anyway, then we left Johannesburg, and we went to Cape Town. Cape Town was beautiful. Everybody said it was going to be beautiful.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Oh, another thing, the whole time we were down there, it was cold.
Yeah.
Johannesburg's cold. Cape Town's cold.
Well, it was winter.
That's what they kept saying, it was winter.
Okay, but the thing about their winter is everything's green. There's flowers. Everything, and I kept going, well, It's green. It can't be winter. Oh, but it's not raining. That's what makes it winter. And the only way you could tell it was winter was there were oak trees that had their brown leaves on them. They were not green. That was the only thing that was not green. And that's the only way you could tell it was winter. And now in Johannesburg, the grass was a little bit, you know, it was brown because it was dry. But when we got to Cape Town, they had rain, so it was, but it's still their winter, but it was green there. So.
But also they don't have any heat in the houses. That's
right.
What made it colder.
Well, because they said it really only gets cold like 2 months out of the year, and most of them don't want to put the money into a heating system for 2 months out of the year.
Uh-huh.
So they'll use space heaters or lots of blankets or things, and we just weren't used to that. So we had to sleep in sweats and lots of blankets and things. So
we go on to Cape Town. It's by the ocean. And it's beautiful because it's a big city again, very modern, very, very just like America.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Right in the middle of Cape Town is this huge mountain.
Mm-hmm. Table Mountain.
Table Mountain. Mm-hmm. It's very big. And all of Cape Town is built all the way around the mountain.
Mm-hmm.
But we had dinner down by in a mall right by the water.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And it was cold.
Yeah, we had blankets. We're wrapped up in blankets, or I was, because I didn't have a jacket.
Well, they give everybody a blanket while you're sitting out there at the table. Everybody
mm-hmm.
has a blanket, and they have torches burning to keep it
mm-hmm.
warm.
Mm-hmm.
But that was beautiful. But I think the biggest event of Cape Town was whenever we went out to Cape Point. Now, when we were on the airplane going over, if any of you have ever been on the planes that go overseas, they have a map in the little TV that you watch, where the shows, the movies and the TV shows while you're traveling. On there, they have a map to show where you are, where the little plane is, how many hours you got to go until you land, all of that. So they had the map of Africa. On the tip of Africa, off of the Cape of Good Hope, I saw where they had the Atlantic Ocean coming in from the left and the Indian Ocean coming in from the right, and they meet right at the tip of the Cape of Good Hope. And I was laughing about it. I said, oh, yeah, they meet. How do they know where they meet? Is there a line drawn on the ocean? Because how do they know where they come together? It's just water. It should be all flowing all the way United, all around the world. Oh, how could they tell the difference? Well, we got to Cape Town. We found exactly how they know the difference. It's amazing. We went down to, they drove us to Cape Point. It's a nature reserve.
Yeah, you had to go through the reserve to get there.
Uh-huh. And along the way, there's signs all around, watch out for baboons. They said, baboons are dangerous. They're wild animals. Don't feed them.
Right. And we saw some. And they were sitting there for their picture moments.
Along the side of the road.
Yep. Yes.
So we did see some wild animals.
And we saw a couple of ostriches. Oh.
But the baboons are the ones they said were all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
And we had to go through this nature reserve. And we had to go way up on that little train that took us way up to this.
Oh, yeah, like a tram car.
Mm-hmm. To take us up on the top of this mountain, I guess. It wasn't really a mountain up there. And that was where Cape Point. So we went out on that, and you could look down. And they said, this is where the two oceans meet. And, you know, if you remember your history out there, that Magellan was the first one to go around the Cape of Good Hope way, way back when he was exploring. And there have been numerous wrecks along that way. All the sailing ships and everything all down through time had terrible wrecks going around, trying to navigate around the Cape of Good Hope. For a while, they called it the Cape of Storms, and then they named it to the Cape of Good Hope. But we stood there. We could look down on the ocean. This was the southernmost tip of Africa where they said the two oceans meet and come together.
Uh-huh.
And really, it is like a line.
Yeah, you can almost see a line out a ways in the water. I kept seeing it before, and I thought it was something out there, but actually it was where the two bodies met, and it was water that was churning like in an eddy or something, and then all the way to it is almost like a line.
It goes way out.
And then if you look up at where we were on the land and where the currents were coming in, they were actually going in two different directions, you know, away from the land. So, but yeah, where that water was churning, that... And they said when the wind currents meet each other, they always have a lot of storms and everything right there, too. So I guess that's where they were. That was the big X marks the spot kind of thing.
Yeah,
so.
where they would have many, many wrecks there, especially if they had rainy weather, too. But it's hard to believe why would one ocean coming from one direction would be going one way and then the other ocean is going a different way, different direction. Mm-hmm. And then they meet. I guess it's almost like clashing.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a strange phenomena that would happen like
well,
that.
Well, and we were talking about Australia has a similar situation, but it doesn't seem to have this
turbulence.
And it could be that, you know, Australia is kind of rounded corners where Africa comes down to that tip. So maybe that has something to do with it.
The same with South America, too.
Right,
it has a lot
right.
of violence around there.
Right.
But also, of the bottom of Australia, you have Tasmania. And there's water between Australia and Tasmania, and I think that may be what is breaking this up, where you don't have as sharp of a divide.
Yeah, could be.
But that's where the Indian Ocean hits the Tasmanian Sea and the Pacific, where it all comes around. We learn a lot this way, things you would never know. But that was interesting to see the point, the southernmost point of Africa, where the two oceans meet. And then they could see the animals, and it's very beautiful.
It was very beautiful. And that water was a beautiful blue.
And they said there was, if you stayed there long enough, you'd see whales.
Yes, and I was wanting to. I wanted to sit right there and see whales, but I didn't.
Also, in Johannesburg, Julie had experiences with the birds. They have so many different kinds of birds there.
Oh, yeah, the haridas.
Haridas.
Yeah, when we got there, the first morning I woke up to this bird that sounded a little bit like a crow. It was just cawing, and I thought, oh, okay, it's a crow. And then when I went downstairs, I said something about it, and they said, oh, that's the haridah. And I said, it's really unusual because usually they don't come out now or and stuff. In the winter. And then, you know, we went a couple of days, and then they made a comment, and they said, you know, ever since you guys have been here, these birds have been around, and they don't normally do this. They don't usually come, but they've been here every morning. They've been here every day, and they just sit right on the rooftop, and they're greeting everything. Then we start paying attention, and we start noticing everywhere we were going and doing things, there were a lot of birds, a lot of collections of birds, and having fun and doing things. And they said, this is not, well, actually, a lot of things kept happening. And they kept going, this doesn't normally happen here.
Not in the winter.
This is very rare.
So we were making rare occurrences.
Yeah, I'm not sure what we were doing, but something was happening. So.
But I always like noticing the different kinds of birds and, you know, and animals everywhere you go.
Well, the Hadidah was a big gray bird with a long beak, kind of a little bit of a rounded beak. And so it looks nothing like a crow, but it sounds like a crow.
Sounds like a crow. Okay. So anyway, we're in Cape Town. I didn't have any class there. I had to lecture, and they had an expo. So we went to the expo, and I did the lecture, and they said, well, you're just going to have an hour.
Mm-hmm.
Well, for me, an hour doesn't even begin to touch the amount of work I have. I was going to have to really condense. So I thought, well, I'll do as best I can.
Mm-hmm. And they said, okay, people will probably have questions because you're new here, and they know you have a lot of things. So do your talk, and then they'll probably want to ask you questions, so just take it outside and finish up there, because they had next speaker coming in after you.
Yeah.
So we were prepared to take you out for questions, but we weren't prepared for
what happened.
Right.
So I did the hour lecture, and they were asking so many questions. And the first thing you know, the hour was gone very quickly. So we did get out because we had to. The next speaker was coming in.
Yeah.
The whole room.
Yeah, we said we're going to continue it outside, and so we moved outside. The entire room followed, and sat and just went out completely outside, and we continued it outside. It was so funny. And here she is sitting on a bench, and everybody is sitting at her feet on the ground. This was, I have to tell you, this was such a wondrous, magical thing to see. It was just, you know, it's just one of those things that just, it was one of those goosebumpy kind of things. But it was really, and they were sitting there so absorbing the information or thing. But it was so wonderful to watch this.
Transfixed.
Yes.
And you can tell they were drinking it in, because it's like the things I was saying is like they'd never heard it before.
Right.
There was
never heard, or they're really hungry to hear it, or, you know, it's like they don't hear it enough, maybe, or something. So
that's why I think it is. Mm-hmm. It is new.
Mm-hmm.
And so they were just drinking it in and asking all these questions. They couldn't get enough. We kept.
Well, talking. I mean, because again, their expo. I mean, their vendors were, you know, all the same things that we have over here. It's metaphysics and everything. So it's like they're there, but there's still something that's growing and changing. So.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's like the expo was the beginning. Yeah, they had the readers, and they had the selling crystals and jewelry and all the things they do here. Even some of the, but a lot of the speakers seem to be focusing on health and health products, too.
That's true, yeah.
You know, things like that.
Yeah.
The same as in Australia, they're focusing on a lot of that.
Right.
But it was really fascinating to have them all sit there and ask all these questions. And I told them about the classes and everything. Then afterwards, when we finally broke and it was time to leave, they were closing, and they didn't want to go, but it was finally time to leave, and they came up and said, how many would you need to have a class to teach my technique in Cape Town? And Julie told them, oh, about 30.
Mm-hmm.
And then they said, well, we can have 30 by tonight. Can you start tonight?
Right. So we're definitely going back to Cape Town and doing classes.
He said, no, we can't start tonight. We have to go on to Australia. But that's how enthusiastic they were. So I said, we will definitely go back. I didn't know if we would in the beginning, but I guess we will now.
Oh, yeah.
But we're going to have to go back after the World Cup.
Right. Yeah, we really don't want to be in the middle of that.
No, not with the soccer and all of that, because they're expecting a huge avalanche of people from all over the world coming in then. That's what they're preparing for. So
right.
If we go back, it'll probably have to be in the fall. because that's then it'll all be over with. It's going to be in July, wasn't it, the World
Cup?
Yeah,
in July, but I guess the event itself is just a few days long, but they expected to have tourists there for like 6 weeks for it. So,
So we will definitely be going back in next year for that because, oh, it was beautiful to see the enthusiasm of the people.
Yeah.
And we've got to satisfy that.
Mm-hmm.
So we will be doing a class there. What else happened in Cape Town? Was that most of it? After that, we were only there a few days or so.
Mm-hmm.
Then we had to get back to Johannesburg because we had to get on to Australia. And that was another 10-hour flight. All these were 10-hour flights. But people have told me if you go direct from the States to South Africa, it's a good 24 hours.
Mm-hmm.
That's why we broke it up by stopping in London. Even then, it was 10 hours from London and 10 hours on to Perth in Australia, and I did the Conscious Living Expo there. And that turned out real well. We had huge crowds at the lecture and at the workshop.
Right.
I did the group workshop where I do the group hypnosis.
Mm-hmm.
And at our conference, you know, we had here in June, I did the biggest crowd I've ever had. We had about 400 people, and I put the whole room under at one time. But this time we had
140, I think
140
it was.
People in Perth at the
very
expo.
Very good showing. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
And they really got a lot out of that.
It's always fun to watch a room of people laying all over the floor.
Well, there was one woman, though, who kind of jumped the gun.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
She jumped the gun, and we were starting, and I was just beginning the group regression. And in the beginning, it's just very simple. I keep them in a light state, and we were just very beginning, you're going to look at the outside of your house.
Mm-hmm.
And I just started when all of a sudden we heard this noise. And it kind of sounded at first like somebody whimpering and then like somebody beginning to not really scream, but just crying and letting out sounds, you know. And I had to stop. I said, what in the world is that? And this one woman in the front row, she'd already jumped smack dab in the middle of a past life, and we weren't even going yet.
She was already at the death scene.
she
was being killed.
that's very rare. When I do a group regression, they don't make a sound. They're just laying all over the floor like everybody's sleeping. Sometimes you might see somebody crying if they're getting into something emotional. But this was very unusual.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had a motion to Julie to go over and talk to her, and she said she was being stabbed.
Yeah, she said she had a sword. She's like, take the sword out. And so I had to work with her, and then we worked her back up and everything. But she just went very deep very quickly and just jumped ahead of you. And
yeah,
I think she did that a couple of times. And I was like, back off.
We weren't ready to go, and she was already being murdered.
Mm-hmm.
But at first I said, let's take her outside. And they said, no, she couldn't move. She had a sword through her.
Right.
So Julie worked with her, and then we got her calmed down to where she could continue and watch it as an observer. And then we had to start over again.
Yeah, she was fine after that.
Yeah, we didn't have any more problems. It was just a surprise. At least we hadn't got too far into the thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I could begin again. So you never know what's going to happen. Have interesting things happen at these expos and these workshops. So that's always a first. You never can say nothing will ever happen.
No. No, you can never say that on your things.
There's always a first time for everything. So we did that, and then we had my class there, and that was the second largest class I've had. Last year in Perth, we had 91 people. It was a huge class. And this year, we had 52 people. And I'm very, very proud of the ones in Australia. They are getting this. Because after we finished with this class, I had my level 2, which is the advanced. I have that for one day, and that's for the ones who have at least had a year practicing. And they come, and if they have problems and questions.
Or just want to share and, you know, whatever. A lot of them, they like the camaraderie. So,
oh, definitely, mm-hmm. to see what the other ones are doing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it's fantastic because the ones in Australia are having wonderful results. They're actually having the miracles happen.
Mm-hmm.
So this, I always worry about, can it be taught? They are getting it, and they're having wonderful results over
mm-hmm.
there. Wonderful
mm-hmm.
healings are taking place. Next week on this show, I'm going to be talking about a lot of the healings that are being done by the ones in Australia and some of the new ones that I've come up with. They don't have a guest, so we'll be focusing on a lot of the things that have been happening in our work. But to me, it's very fulfilling. I love this, that I'm finding out this can be taught and people are getting it and they're using
mm-hmm.
it. That is so satisfying to know that you can do it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's
right.
having wonderful results all over the world.
Right.
Be interesting to see what the ones in Cape Town do with it.
Oh, yeah, because I think they're that same. You know, they're gung-ho. They're ready. So I think they would probably jump on it. And,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that's what's happening in Australia. This time we only went to one city. They kept saying, why don't you come to Sydney? But we decided to just do Perth because that's where we had our biggest response. But next year we're going to go back. We're going to be doing it in...
Yeah, we'll probably do several cities across all of that area. So
yeah.
So watch out, here we come.
Yeah, we're going to go back to Sydney, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe Melbourne.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Of course, there's always Brisbane.
Right.
There's more cities there, but this time I tied it in with the Conscious Living Expo, so we were able to do the lectures, the workshops, and the class. So by the time we got through with all of that, we were thinking, well, now we can go home. Because even though you're going all the way around the world, I didn't have anything else planned. See, always before, I've always, like, gone to Europe and come home. Gone to Australia and come home. But this time, it was a lot easier just to keep going. So when we left Australia, we ended up in Honolulu just to break up the trip.
Bummer.
Bummer, yeah, Honolulu. After being cold
Oh, it was very nice and warm, and we're sitting out in the sun by the pool under the swaying palm trees. It was very nice.
Because even in my class at the expo,
it was cold.
The expo was done on a fairgrounds,
mm-hmm.
and they said the fairgrounds, it's usually people there during the summer when there's
right.
natural
Yeah, they don't
sun.
Usually have anything in there at that time.
So we had this huge room full of people doing the class, and a lot of them were sitting there with blankets wrapped around their legs trying to keep warm.
Yeah, that room was cold.
So then we go to Honolulu. That was a good relief. No more cold South Africa, no more cold Australia. We had it nice and warm.
Right. It was nice and warm.
In Honolulu. So then we come home. We've been home now about 4 days, I think.
Mm-hmm.
We got back here in the morning. It was in...
Sunday. We got back on Sunday.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And after getting groceries, after getting to the airport, I got home. It was 2:30 in the afternoon. I went to bed. All I want to do is find a bed. It's very hard to sleep on planes. You really can. You just want to get horizontal. So I got home, and I slept around the clock. I didn't wake up till the next morning. I think it was 10 o'clock.
Yeah.
And we needed that badly. It takes about 2 or 3 days to get over jet lag from covering so many different time zones.
Well, I forgot. Doing what we did, we actually lost, let's see, we gained a day. So we actually are 1 day younger than everybody else around us. So if we keep doing this, we're going to get younger and younger and younger.
Because when you go to Australia, you usually lose a day going over and then gain it the same day back.
Right.
But when you go all the way around the world, you're just gay today.
Yeah, so I think that's the other part that you're trying to figure out as you're getting over jet lag and everything. You're also trying to adjust for this day that you lost or gained or whatever you did with it. So.
Oh, boy. But it's this is all part of it. If you're going to do this work, you have to travel. You've got to do it. And it's a dedication that you have to do these things. But next year, I think going back to South Africa, we're expecting a lot more people. It's going to be very good.
Oh, absolutely.
Good.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I think that's most of the trip, isn't it?
Yeah. Can I insert? I hope there's time.
Yeah, I'm going to talk about these
well,
other things
here. Well,
it's
not a comment. It's a question for the listeners.
Okay.
If anybody might know something, because as you know, one of my big dilemmas on all these trips is getting internet access.
Oh.
And because that's one of my main purposes on the job. I mean, I'm helping and doing things, but I'm also still trying to work and communicate with the office back here in the States and do things back here. And I'm trying to have like a remote office. And I have difficulty always being able to get internet access in places that we are. So I'm trying to find something. I know they have it in the United States for, I mean, each country seems to have their own thing where you can get the internet access anywhere. You know, I can't remember what they call it, like it's a little USB port type thing that where you can have access within that country, and to go to other countries it's outrageously expensive. So I'm just trying to find something that's reasonable and works worldwide. So if anybody knows anything like that, let us know.
Email us.
Yes, email us, please.
Tell them the email.
Oh, it can be Julia@OzarkMT.com, Julia@OzarkMT.com. Okay, that's my commercial thing that I need. Okay,
okay.
You can finish yours.
And if you're overseas, it's OzarkMT.com.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I just wanted to mention that back in early part, I think it was in March or so, I went to Boston and filmed for the History Channel. Well, it just came out. It came out this week, or came out really the week we were coming back.
Yes,
The documentary that I was filming for, and it's now showing on the History Channel. The name of the documentary is The Nostradamus Effect. And, you know, when you film for these things, you never know how they're going to put it together. And I filmed quite a long time that day about the Nostradamus, and they were focusing on the third Antichrist, and really all three Antichrists. So I never know what they're going to do with it. Well, in my work now with the Nostradamus, I'm going in a different direction. I have the feeling it's not going to be as bad as the books predicted and as bad as Nostradamus' predictions said it was going to be. I have a definite feeling as though we have turned a corner and moving away. And Julie said she gets feelings.
Well, that's another thing. But when you read the book and you can kind of tell where we are in there, well, as far as time-wise, well, you can see by that it's not to the degree that he was seeing at that point. So it's like, okay, it's already curbing, and it keeps curbing. So that, but yeah, what I got intuitively when I think about some parts of it that didn't, you know, it's like, well, where is this? Where is this? What I'm getting intuitively is that we have taken another probability, it's like
another
a sidestep. It's like a sidestep over here, another branch. So if anybody else gets that or gets something like it, it feels right. So, you know.
Well, Nostradamus said many times that everything was not set in stone. He wanted us to change it. He didn't want us to have the horrible predictions he saw. And I think we have turned a corner. We have made a difference.
Well, we can definitely hope that. So,
well, during the interview, I kept trying to steer it toward that I don't think it's going to be so bad. Maybe this third Antichrist, if he's out there at all, is not going to make the appearance and the effect that was originally predicted. I was trying to stress that. Well, that wasn't what they wanted.
That won't sell, probably.
When the documentary, if you watch it, it's a Nostradamus Effect. They are still stressing that the third Antichrist is there. He's going to destroy the world. He's going to lead us into this terrible wars in the Middle East. all of the horrible things that were predicted, and they're still stressing the negative, the mm-hmm. violence, mm-hmm. and the awful parts.
Mm-hmm.
They used some of my interview, but they didn't use the parts I was hoping they would. I hoped they were going to end it saying, I think we have turned the corner.
Yeah. End it with hope.
Yeah, end it with hope instead of this very negative, mm-hmm. down-type
mm-hmm.
feeling.
Mm-hmm.
But that was the way they ended it, was that that he's coming, he's here, you know, where is he,
mm-hmm.
when's he going to
mm-hmm.
strike?
Expectation of doom.
Doom and gloom.
Yes, that's bad.
But anyway, that's out there, and they did use part of my interview. Okay, before we sign off, I do want to mention I'm going to be in L.A., well, Burbank, really.
Yeah.
L.A. area in Burbank, and this is the 1st of November.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I'll be having a lecture. This one's not in Burbank. This one
that's
is
in Long Beach.
Long Beach.
Mm-hmm.
First, we're going to have a lecture in Long Beach, California, and I'm going to be doing a lecture, but I'm also this very good friend of mine, and we've had him on the show. His name is Blair Styra. He is the foremost channeler and spiritual psychic in New Zealand.
He is fantastic, people. He's remarkable.
He channels an entity called Tabash, but he is very accurate. He's right on. There's no wishy-washy stuff.
No,
he tells it exactly like it is.
Mm-hmm.
Been doing this for many, many years. And when I was in New Zealand, over the last 5 years I've known him, he introduced me to New Zealand. We have joint lectures. This time I'm going to introduce him to America. We're doing it out in L.A. on Long Beach on November the 1st. You can get more details by checking on our website. Where we're going to have a three-hour joint lecture that we've done.
Mm-hmm.
We've done this in New Zealand. People there thought it was rehearsed because
mm-hmm.
it just went so together.
Yeah, it's phenomenal.
So we'll be doing that, and then right after the lecture, I'll be doing my hypnosis class in Burbank. If anybody is interested in learning my technique, this will be a good time. We're going to have it in Burbank. It's that weekend.
Right,
isn't
the 5th through the
8th. Isn't
the 8th.
It? Yeah, I think that's what it is. All the details are on our website. But I'll be doing a class there. I think that's the last one in the United States.
Yeah, for this year.
For this
mm-hmm.
year. We have, if we're trying to plan 2010 yet, we haven't got that schedule worked out. So if anybody's interested, look up our website at OzarkMountain.com, OzarkMt.com. Or OzarkMt.com, and click under schedules.
Well, it's on the front page.
Is it on the front
mm-hmm.
page
yeah,
now about
the front
that?
Page. Both things, both the lecture and the class are on. There's the link about learning your technique, and it'll take you to the schedules. To
okay.
The class page. So
this mm-hmm. is the last class in the United States. All right, so I think that's going to be enough for tonight. We've covered all around the world.
Yep.
And next week, I'll be talking about some of these miraculous healings that are taking place from people who are taking the class. So I guess that's it. So good night, everybody, and thanks for listening.
Aloha.